Powerful Radio is pleased to present Church of the Masses with award-winning Catholic columnist, screenwriter, and media consultant, Barbara Nicolosi.
Well, hello. Hello and welcome to Church of the Masses Radio. My name is Barbara Nicolosi, and I'm very happy to be part of the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network. If you're tuning in for the first time, this is the show where we discuss the intersection of culture. I'm a very devout Catholic. I had been a member of the religious community of the Daughters of St. Paul, which is the media community, for 9.5 years. Then I came out to Hollywood, and I worked for 23 years in Hollywood as a writer, producer, consultant, many things. And I started a little program called Act One, which is meant to train believers, Christians, for mainstream ministry careers. So then I got my PhD, and now I am training full-time at Regent University. I'm the head of screenwriting programs at the School of Cinema at Regent University in Virginia Beach. So that's me. Welcome to Church of the Masses. So the big news this week is the Oscar nominations came out. And the first impression that I had when I saw the Oscar nominations was one thing that's kind of good this year is that the movies that were nominated this year were actually movies that people saw, regular people. So of the 9 Best Picture contenders, 5 of them have already passed the 100 million mark at the global box office. So, I mean, this is good. So often you see the list of movies for Oscar and you just go, didn't see it. And this is so stupid because it means that the audience is not invested, that this is very much inside baseball, and that people, they wonder every year why the ratings keep going down of the Oscars. Well, you know, they went up from five pictures to be nominated for Best Picture to 9, thinking that was going to help, and then they nominated 9 movies for the last few years that most people hadn't seen. So this year is a little better. Movies, Ford versus Ferrari, Little Women, Parasite, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Joker, all have passed $100 million already. And I think 1917 by Sam Mendes is also going to. So that's good. That means this year's contenders are actually things that the audience liked too, that had word of mouth, et cetera. So that's the first thing I thought. Of course, the controversy has been that this is Oscar so white, you know, because there's nobody who was nominated for Best Director that was a person of color, except, of course, Parasite, the Asian, the Korean film. But once again, how dare, and there wasn't a single woman in that was nominated for Best Director. And so how dare they, you know, and so it's set off again this screeching fest over why are the Oscars so white? And especially because a couple years ago, when that phrase was first coined, Oscars so white, the Academy was shamed. You know, of course, they're the summit of liberal political correctness there in the Motion Picture Academy, and so they brought in a whole bunch of people into the Academy to vote, to be voters now, who are people of color, women. You know, it was like, we are going to make this much more diverse voting bloc, so that we will see more movies from all different traditions, whatever. Well, surprise, people who are black and women vote for best movies regardless, apparently, of whether they are made by women or made by people of color. And so it's just kind of funny. Here they are again. How did this happen? Well, it happened because in the end, this question of what's the best movie has nothing to do with what color or what sex the producers are of the movie. It has to do with whether it resonates with people. So anyway, everybody's screaming their heads off, you know, about that, and trying to, you know, scratching their heads. How can we fix this? Another interesting thing is that the by far the most nominations went to a streaming service and not a studio. So Netflix, is nominated for The Irishman and Marriage Story, I think, I forget how many exactly they got, but they beat out pretty much everybody, all the other studios. So people are screaming about that. It's like, this is a streaming service. These people don't make movies. You know, well, the fact is they do make movies. They make movies to stream. However, they do give them a limited theatrical release so that they can, you know, get the profile higher. And there you go. I think it's funny that, you know, that you see people kind of sucking their thumb about that issue, too. It's like, how dare Netflix be on the same footing as, you know, any of the big studios? They're a streaming service. But there it is. OK, so, yeah, I'm not sure what else to say. There was a lot of people talking about snub. I mean, I do think there was one snub. And I say this not because she's a woman, but because I think the movie was stellar, and I'm going to be reviewing it later in the hour, and that is Little Women, the new version by yes, her name is... Little Women is in the final nine for Best Picture. But, you know, people are saying, oh, Jennifer Lopez, she played that crude, vile, disgusting, you know, prostitute, and she should have been nominated for going there, but she didn't get one. She was, you know, kind of snubbed. And so I don't know. I think overall I was pleased with the Oscar nominations. It didn't seem to be the usual kind of, even in an election year, you expect it to really be about politics. And the movie that would have been that one is, of course, Bombshell by the movie about Fox News. And that one only picked up one nomination. So there you go. But anyway, so there's Oscar noms. We'll be talking more about that as we go ahead. You know, I wanted to give a little heads up about a project that people should be aware of. So Disney has a new show on the Disney Channel for children, and it is they're premiering. It's called The Owl House, and it's premiered on Friday, January 10th. And the whole premise of The Owl House is that this is a new realm. There's a portal, a girl named Luz. She's a teenager, I guess. She finds a portal to a new world, and in this realm where humans are not liked. And so she has to disguise herself as a witch to fit in. And so that the realm is called Demon Town. And Luz takes up residence with Ida, the owl lady, who's the most powerful witch. And the whole premise of this new show, The Owl House, is that sometimes you have to use witchcraft to bring about good. Yeah. And so I think this is distinctly different than Harry Potter for a lot of reasons. And I don't think the wizarding in Harry Potter was more, these are wizards. This is who they are. That's who they are as beings. And Harry has to harness the right kind of black magic to beat Voldemort. That was not what that show was, what that movie was about. So I think this is different. And this seems to me to be pretty dark. And I just want to give you a heads up. You should watch it with your kids if you decide to let them watch it. But frankly, someone said about the show that the writer's room for the show is full of books on witchcraft, witches, and spells to take inspiration from. Right. So be careful. That's all we need is your 7-year-old deciding to try taking up witchcraft. Huh? All right. Another thing I wanted to give you a heads up on, which I think some of you are going to love, is that there is a new version of Lord of the Rings that is coming out, and it is being made by Amazon. And so I'm just giving you a heads up. I haven't seen it yet. I'm a little nervous. I mean, they've completed the casting. Nobody's seen it really yet. But the idea of the show is it's going to be a series on Amazon, and they have a huge cast and lots of money to spend. And the idea is that they're going to make stories of that precede Tolkien's narrative. So stories of the Shire, stories of the elves and the trolls or whatever, the orcs, whoever, I'm not sure. I don't know the show well enough. But it's a huge project, tons of money going into it. And Some of the people from Game of Thrones are involved, so that means it's going to be very brutal, and it's going to be interesting to see if they make it sexual, too, because that would really turn off, I think, the audience of the material, the base audience of the material. But you have a massive production coming out. And so what they're going to do here, this idea of coming up with stories that Tolkien didn't write, right? They're going to write before Tolkien, and so there it is. So keep that in mind. It's supposed to be coming out at some point, and it's all been completely cast now as of January 14th. I'll make you all aware of something going on. There was a call by Robert George. Robert George, if you don't know, Robert George is the iconic McCormick professor of jurisprudence, and he's the director of the James Madison Program in American Ideals at Princeton University. And he's been there since 1985. He's mentored countless influential conservatives, people like Ted Cruz, and the New York Times described him as the country's most influential conservative Christian thinker. I'm citing Daily Wire here. And anyway, George wrote to Barr, to Attorney General Barr, and said, we've got to do something about pornography. If you're interested, just check it out. I think this is a movement whose time has come. All right, stay tuned. Barbara Nicholas, yeah, great guest coming up. This is Church of the Master.
Welcome to our January 11th, 2020 Spiritual Warfare Conference. Every year without fail, this is our most popular, well-attended event. This year's Spiritual Warfare Conference will host Adam Bly, a Catholic demonologist, and an auxiliary member of the International Association of Exorcists, along with Dr. Luis Sandoval, a psychiatrist who's part of the Healing, Deliverance, and Exorcism team for the Diocese of Orange. These two gentlemen bring tons of experience and expertise in the area of spiritual warfare. This is going to be a high-information Catholic seminar. I'll be there as well, sharing some riveting stories on the diabolical and liberation found through Jesus Christ from my best-selling book, The Devil in the City of Angels. Mark your calendars, come and join us, and meet other radio hosts from Jesus 911. Contrary to popular belief, spiritual warfare is not demon-centered. It's Christ-centered. Come join us and learn how to armor up and fight the good fight of faith. Catholics, wake up. Don't hit the snooze button. Join us at St. Christopher Catholic Church, 629 South Glendora Avenue, West Covina, California, on January 11, 2020. See you then. Strength and honor in Jesus' name.
Sirach 11:24 says, "Do not say, I am self-sufficient. What harm can come to me now?" According to St. Catherine of Siena, presumption is like vermin burrowing at the root of the tree of our soul. If we do not uproot it with great care and humility, it will eventually destroy the soul. May God keep us from all presumption of mind and heart, and realize that we depend on Him for everything.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
And hello again, and welcome back to Church of the Masses. My name is Barbara Nicolosi. I'm a writer, member of the Writers Guild of America, a screenwriter, I'm a producer, I'm an educator, and I'm a devout Christian, Catholic Christian. And so what we do here every week is we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. We do news of interest to people that are things out in the culture. And then I always interview somebody who's actually doing something. You know, I was telling somebody the other day that I met Fred Rogers years ago at a Christopher's luncheon, or dinner, actually. We both got an award. How ridiculous is that, me getting an award next to Fred Rogers? But anyway, the Christopher's motto was, it's better to light a single candle than to curse the darkness. So what I do every week is I bring on people who are lighting many candles by way of encouraging everybody out there who's listening to start making something, start writing, start painting, start, you know, doing plays, start acting, doing whatever. It's time, long past time, for us believers to have our say in this culture, in the marketplace of ideas. My next guest is somebody who's done that. He's done it for several decades now, has an amazing resume of kids media. Phil Lawler. Phil, how are you?
I am very fine, thank you. How are you?
I am great, and I'm so honored to have you on the show. And have we met, Phil? Because I've spent some time up at Focus on the Family. I couldn't be sure if we had met when I was there.
I don't know if we have or not. Did you also teach at Azusa Pacific University?
I did, and I saw that you teach there too. Yeah, I was in the Honors College until this. Actually, I left in July this year to move to Regent University here. So we're going to have you out at Regent because I have lots of students who would be just love to hear from you. And so, Phil, I'm going to just do a little intro here. Phil has written, produced, created, and performed in dozens of audio video series, fixture on radio, Christian radio especially. He's won, he was named the National Religious Broadcasters Radio Program of the Year for 2020, which was the, which he won the Golden Mike Award. Adventures in Odyssey won that Program of the Year, and Phil has been a huge part. He's written more than 225 episodes and directed more than 325 for the program. Huge list of credits here in kids media on the secular side as well as the Christian side. It's just really an honor to have you. We had Jeff Holder a few weeks ago, and you and Jeff are like twin stars in this kids media area in the church.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been quite a long run here, more than 30 years now. So. Yeah, all those things were for Adventures in Odyssey, the National Religious Broadcasters Radio Program of the Year, the Golden Mike Awards. Those all go for Adventures in Odyssey. And of course, we just praise God for all of that. It's really wonderful that he is able to use us in the way that he does.
Yeah, and besides Adventures in Odyssey, I'm looking here, Jungle Jam and Friends, Iliad House, Little Dogs in the Prairie, The Wubbulous World of Dr. Seuss, Elmo, Aardvark. I mean, tons and tons. It's really quite a resume. So, Phil, why don't you tell my audience how you got started in this? I mean, I see you got a BA in radio, TV, film from Cal State Fullerton. But did you go to school knowing this is what you want to do? Like, how did you end up here?
Well, yeah, I actually knew what I wanted to do. I'm one of those rare people who kind of figured out what I wanted to do when I was really, really young. I loved watching television. I was a television baby. I was one of that generation that grew up on the TV and saw all the wonderful programs of yesteryear, the 1960s, all those great programs there. We sell them short because, you know, there so many of those programs seemed at the time to be just mindless. But if you look at them now, you see what a great series of programs those all were. They really had great values. And there were things in those programs. I always like to tell people when I talk to them, for instance, the show Gilligan's Island. Uh-huh. Well, Gilligan's Island seemed to be completely mindless, you know, it's just this silly nonsense. But there was more culture involved in Gilligan's Island. In one episode, just one single episode of Gilligan's Island, you had literary references to Mary Poppins, to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, to Sherlock Holmes, and to Frankenstein, and Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. In one episode.
You know, it reminds me of, I swear I learned everything I know about opera from Bugs Bunny, you know, But I mean, it was, if you think about it, you know, they really did kind of just throw in stuff like that in the most unlikely ways. And a lot of us, that's where we got our education of higher culture.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Not only that, U.S. history. When I was in my undergraduate work, I took a course in television, and people were talking about how vapid television is. And I stood up and recited the preamble to the Constitution of the United States. And I asked, how many of you know that? How many of you know the preamble to the Constitution? You know what I just did?
And we the people, is that that?
More perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. And people were like, what is that? Wow, that's great. How did you know that? And I said, you know where I learned that? Not in a history class, not in high school. I learned it from Captain Kirk on Star Trek.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That's so cool. I didn't even realize that. I figured I learned it from Jailhouse Rock, but wow, that's
exactly.
Great.
I mean, say that television and these popular culture that way, it just has to be vapid. No, it doesn't. It actually is a very, very powerful education tool. And when I started doing my work in radio and started doing my work for kids, I drew on all of that. I went back to that completely and said, you know what, this was really good back then, and this was really important. And they taught us stuff. We learned a lot of stuff, and we don't have to just be vapid now and just be a little entertained. We can do things that are carry much more weight and are much more profound.
But it requires the people who are writing though to have a broader background. You know, I say to my students all the time, I'm teaching screenwriters at Regent, you know, and I was like, interesting work comes from interesting people, you know, and interesting people are people who know about more than lighting a set and f-stops on a camera, right? You have to know history and literature and psychology. And so what was your background with that? Did you grow up in a family where they had you read broadly? I mean, were you a reader?
Oh, yes. Very, very much so. I took to books very early. My father read lots and lots of books, different kinds of books. And we always had books on bookshelves and just, you know, overflowing with books. And one of my favorite things to read, believe it or not, was we had an old Encyclopedia Britannica, and I would just pour through that. I loved the Encyclopedia Britannica. Just in my spare time, I'd sit there.
Yeah, I used to read it too. I loved reading the Encyclopedia. So I guess, you know, well, that shows your writers if you have a history of readers. You know, so you went to film school, Cal State Fullerton, and so you got a mainstream education. Did they set you up for your career? How did you end up in kids media?
Well, actually, all the education that I got, the upper level education that I got, came later. I decided out of high school that I wanted to do the career first. So I went to, moved out to Hollywood and started doing stuff in Hollywood, working in the film industry, working in the support industry for the film industry more than anything else, behind the scenes, editing and doing film services and things like that, working on films and getting a nice education for that. Well, then, from that, but of course you don't make a great living. And so at one point I found my wife and I, my wife was pregnant with our son, Ian, and I needed a job. So a friend that I was working with said, hey, you know, have you ever thought about writing for the radio? And I said, what are you talking about? Who writes for the radio? And they said, he said, well, there's this organization called Focus on the Family, and they're looking for a writer. They just advertised. And I had never even heard of this group. I'd never heard of them at all. But I blindly sent in writing samples and a resume, and I got a call. And they hired me, and they said, and I had sent in a script. It was a script that I had written it was a film script that I had written but never produced. And apparently Steve Harris was the one who hired me. He liked what he saw, and he hired me and said, well, what we're trying to do is expand what we're doing rather than just do talk stuff. We want to expand it into audio drama. Mm-hmm. And so I was hired to create audio drama. I was hired to create Adventures in Odyssey, and which is what I did. It's
an incredibly successful program, Adventures in Odyssey. I mean, incredible, and recognized so as we noted by the secular side, not just on the Christian side. Mm-hmm. So, what is so great about you're the first guy, radio guy, that I've had on? I mean, I know you do more than that, but yeah, what's so great about radio? Why? How come radio is so powerful?
Oh, well, boy, wow, that's an open-ended question. I love it. Radio drama is so powerful. I think personally, I'm going to get pushback, I know, but I really think it's the best way to tell stories. Mm-hmm. It's the most engaging way, and the reason why is because it involves not only the writers and the producers and the post-production folks and the musicians and all of that on our side, but it involves the listeners, active listening. You have to be involved in the story. And if we're not telling a good story, you're going to check out really, 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 really quickly. But if we're telling a good story, then you get to provide the pictures. You get to provide everything in your head. And so I really have tried to discourage with Odyssey even doing a lot of artwork. Because I want everybody to think of our main character in their own minds the way they want to visualize the main character, the town, all of those kinds of things in their heads. And it makes them just completely sucked in. People really love active participation that way. So I just really love telling stories in audio form.
No, that's a great, great insight that radio requires more from us. An engagement of our imagination, and that makes it even more visceral an experience, right? You're having to make this whole world in your mind to go along with the show. And that's a great thought. So is there a lot of this going on, radio drama still? I mean, the Christians are doing it. Is the rest of the world doing it still?
Well, yeah, you know, it's interestingly enough, when we first started out 32 or 33 years ago, everybody said, nobody does this anymore. Why are you doing this? And I said, well, for one thing, it's a whole lot cheaper than producing a film. You can produce it for a fraction of the cost, and you can tell great stories and produce it for a fraction of the cost. Just as a side note, Stan Freberg, who was a great audio guy way, way back, he did lots of the voices on the Warner Brothers cartoons, and he's just been around forever and ever. He said somebody asked him the same question, why do you do audio stuff instead of film? And he said, well, let me show you. I'll do so right now. And he opened the door and he said, hey, look at this. This is Lake Erie. And you hear Lake Erie in the background, you know. And he said, here's what I'm going to do. We're going to drain Lake Erie. Hey, guys, drain Lake Erie. And you hear Lake Erie draining in the background.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're going to put the plug in. Now fill it up with hot chocolate. put the whipped cream on top. There you go. Here's going on. And now the big giant cherry on top. Yeah, there you go. And then he turned to the guy and said, now do that on film.
Right, exactly. For $450 million, right? Yeah. Exactly. No, that's
so
great.
So, you know, that's the reason why we do this, and that's the reason why we wanted to do it. And of course, everybody did say exactly the same question that you asked, which is that going to be successful? Is anybody going to listen to it? You think people are really going to? I mean, that's old fashioned stuff. I said, well, yes,
people love it. You know, hey, hang in there. We're going to come back for our next segment, and we're going to talk about even more what you're working on now. Thanks.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello again, and welcome back to Church of the Masses. I'm Barbara Nicolosi. I'm a screenwriter, producer, educator, and very committed Christian. And I'm thrilled. I have an amazing guest here, Phil Lawler, who is has an extensive career in kids media and voiceover work, radio. He's worked for people like Mark Burnett of the Survivor fame and Jim Henson, Nickelodeon. He's done just tremendous amount of work all over the business on the Christian side and on the mainstream side. So it's great to have him. You know, Phil, we were talking about the impact, the power of radio. I think you made some great points about that. It requires the audience to engage their imagination, and so can have such a profound impact in someone because you're living in their head in a way that maybe you're not in other when they're watching everything. But I think even more so, this is beautiful for children, right? Because we want kids to expand their imagination, to have developed that part of them. And so, what do you think about like kids media? What do you love about working in kids media?
There's a whole lot of things that I love. Most of the things that you just said, which is, you know, their minds are so open to imagination. They want to live in their imaginations, and everything is so new and so wonderful to them. And so when you can help shape that, when you can help guide that through storytelling and through sound effects and, you know, again, audio stuff which I think is really, really wonderful. We can do so many wacky sound effects or really just create the world from an audio standpoint and have them provide the pictures, theater of the mind. They can provide the pictures in their own heads. That's what's really, really lovely about it. And you know, the really gratifying part, of course, is that when you get to meet fans, when you get to meet people who have heard the program, and they are so into it. They really want to know where, you know, we've done our job when they ask where we want to go on vacation. Where can we go? And where's Odyssey? Can you tell us on a map? We used to get letters like that. And I said, well, you have to get inside my head. That's where.
Yeah, it's in my head. Very good. What do you think? I'm sorry.
I don't think you'll all fit in there, but, you know, you can try.
What do you think the state of, you know, right before you came on, I was previewing or we're kind of letting parents know about a new show that's going to be on the Disney Channel, the Owl, what is it called? Anyway, it's about the witch's realm and you got to be a witch to, you know, save the world. It's a new Disney show. What do you think overall? I mean, you've been in the kids' media side a lot of years. What's the status? Is it scary or is it okay? Is it a little scary? I mean, what do you think? What would you say to parents about this, you know, just letting them turn on Disney Channel and just letting their kids, you know, are they safe there? What would you say about that?
Yeah, I would say to parents that you should never just turn on any medium and, you know, any media at all and use it to be a babysitter. I think you should always be with your children when they're watching stuff, when they're doing stuff, when they're playing games, whatever it is that they're doing, whether it's video games, whether it's audio drama, whether it's reading books, whether it's watching television, whether it's going to the cinema. You should always be engaged with your kids. On Adventures in Odyssey, we try to make it for the entire family. We try to make each program for the entire family, and we have never Whenever we have gotten feedback from parents who said, "Oh, you scared my child. You did something that scared my child," and then we talked to them a little bit further, and they said, "Well, my child was alone. They were listening to the program." We stopped them right there and said, "Well, why was your child listening to the program alone? This is not something. This is never something you're supposed to do. You are tasked by God with raising your children. Why would you let somebody else into your children's head without your supervision?" Mm-hmm. So, and the thing about it is, once that happens now, then you can deal with all sorts of different subject matter, mm-hmm. because you are there as a parent to say, okay, well, that's the way they did it in that program. Here's the topic that we're dealing with, and it's kind of maybe a controversial topic, or maybe it's a little bit, you know, advanced for younger kids. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they believe, but here's what we believe as a family. Here's how we look at it as a family, and as your parents. This is how what we believe. And raising children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, that's part of it. We don't you ever just leave them alone to listen to programs. Yes, there are certain things that are safe. I'd like to think that Adventures in Odyssey is safe, but even we take on a lot of different subject matter that maybe isn't safe.
Yeah, I mean, for the particular child, you just never know where they are, you know. But I do think there are some shows that are not safe for anybody, you know. And I think that, you know, I think that when you skim through, and I think, to tell you the truth, the biggest danger of a lot of kids' media isn't even the shows; it's the advertising between them. You know, I had a friend who she was a higher up in Fox Kids, and she said to me, I realized that I had turned my little boy into a materialist, because at Fox Kids, they were paying $6,000 a minute for animated shows and $2 million for a 30-second ad in between, right? So the toys and the candies looked really good, you know, compared to the show. And so without even realizing it, you know, maybe your kids are you know, becoming – you know, kind of wanting too much stuff, you know, because of what they're watching.
And that's certainly part of it. But even worse, of course, now is that they're starting to the commercials are starting to be more than just for material items. The commercials are starting to be about philosophy and worldview. And those are seeped in there too. And so and it's very, very subtle, you know. When our son was little, he liked to watch Nickelodeon a lot, and Nickelodeon had a kids' rights bill that they were pushing on all the kids. And when you read it, you realize, oh, wow, this basically wants to exclude parents from everything that kids do.
Wow.
And
amazing.
Think, well, no, yeah. I don't want this kind of thing happening. And they were advertising this on every single program.
Wow.
Well, wait, hold on. You know, that's why you need to be with your kids. You know, don't just use it as a babysitter.
Yeah. So, you know, but I have to say, overall, the years that I spent out there, the most healthy, kind of normal, nicest people that I met in the business were on the kids media and animation side. I don't know if it's because they, you know, they really could get away with doing stuff that was good for kids and it was okay, you know, they didn't have to worry about it. But I thought they were some of the nicest people that I worked with on that side. Some of the normalest people too in the industry. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yes, I absolutely agree with that 100%. They're some of the most wonderful people, and they want the same things that everybody else wants. You know, they want good, solid, fun, funny, quality entertainment for their kids.
So,
you know, they say, if we can't find it, we better create it. So
Phil, I got, you know, one of the things, my point here on my show is to encourage people listening. See, this guy's normal. He's doing it. You could do it too. If somebody like 20, a young person's listening here, or somebody that's, you know, interested in, what would you say to them? How do you get started in kids media, animation writing, radio, drama? How do you get started?
Well, the wonderful thing about the modern time that we live in, this is really, really wonderful. It's something that I wish we had when I was a kid, you know, when I was just first starting out, which we didn't have, but we have it now, is this thing called the internet. We have this great thing called the internet, and now, what's great about it is you can find the knowledge of the world at your fingertips on your iPhone. So if you really want to learn some stuff, look it up. You can Google just about anything and it'll tell you. I have a course online about writing. Mm-hmm. You are a writer. You write at a university. You teach writing at a university level. I teach writing at a university level. We are available to you. You can look up, you know, how to do this sort of thing. And then what's really lovely is, and this is what I tell my students as well, I hold up my iPhone and said, you have a recording studio, a movie making studio, right in the palm of your hand. Mm-hmm. You can go out tomorrow and start making films. You can go out this afternoon after this class, write a film, it, edit it, all on this little device that you have in the palm of your hand. Yeah. And then, and not only can you do that, you can now distribute it too. And everybody can see it.
Yeah.
Right away. Mm-hmm. It's called YouTube. Mm-hmm. You can get a YouTube channel, put it on. It doesn't cost you anything. Get a YouTube channel, put it on, put it out there, and you can let the world see how you what you're doing. It's very interesting. Jerry Seinfeld, after he did Seinfeld, he now has a series called Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Yes.
It's a very fun series.
Yeah.
When it premiered, he said, the media was asking him, so you're going to go back on television, you're going to go back to network television. He said, look, my show premieres tomorrow all over the world. I'm premiering it on the internet. It's, it premieres all over the world. Why in the world would I want to limit myself to network television?
Now, it's such a great point. I know when I first came to Hollywood in 1996, it was so much the culture was we're waiting on somebody to pay attention to us, right? You know, you're pitching, you're hoping somebody's going to buy your thing, you're hoping. But now it's like, no, you know what? If you want to do it, do it. Do it at whatever level you can do it. And get it out there and don't sit around, you know, waiting for somebody to give you $1 million for your script idea. No, just do it.
Exactly. And don't worry at first about the quality of it. You get better the more you do it, just like anything else. That's the whole point. You might think, yeah, but I'm just not as good as everybody. I'm just not as good. So what? Go make it.
Yeah.
Everybody.
We'll do it anyway. Yeah. Nobody's that good in the beginning, you know? And I mean, I tell my students all the time, it's like, you have to get past your first 10 things, you know, do, and then they're not going to be great, but they'll get better. If you get feedback and if you love it, you'll get better. So that's such great advice. And so what are you working on now, Phil? You want to plug something? Do you have a book that I noticed you said you have online things. So if somebody wants to hear from you more, how can they hear from you?
Yeah, I'm preparing actually right now my course. I teach courses in writing at Azusa Pacific University, and now I'm thinking, you know what? I want to put these up online. I think I'd like to see if they can go online, and I'm preparing those right now. There's a convention I'll be appearing at in March called Sonic Con. It's the first audio drama convention on the West Coast. It's out in Virginia. It's at the Liberty University.
Really? Okay. Cool. Yeah.
March 20. Mm-hmm. I think it's March 20th through 22nd. So I'll be out there at that time. I have a book series it's called the Young Wit book series that's out right now. My one of my partners, Dave Arnold, and I are writing it. And it's
thank
all about
you.
Character comes every winter when he's a kid. So get those.
Thank you so much, Phil. We got a hard break. I really appreciate you being on. God bless you and Godspeed. Stay tuned. We're going to review Little Women.
We have an exciting story for you to listen to, the story of John Pridmore. John Pridmore was a hitman for the gangs in East London.
I met some guys who seemed to have everything that I thought would make you happy. So I started working for these people. So to my shame, I was involved in vicious crime of all sorts.
He collected debts for the gangs, and if people didn't pay their debts, it was his job to kill them.
And as I drove home that night, I thought, what have I become that I could kill someone and not even care?
He was in the elevator on his way up to the 17th floor, and there was a 17-year-old young man in the elevator with him. Suddenly, this young man looked John right in the eye, and he said, Jesus loves you.
And I said the first prayer I'd ever said. I said, up to now, all I've done is take from you, God. Now I want to give.
Within a year, by the grace of God, John was able to get out of the gang and be freed from this road to hell that he had been walking on. Go to Virgin Most Powerful YouTube channel and listen to this story today.
This is Terry Barber. I want to thank you for supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And here's an easy way to support us by going to smile.amazon.com and type in Catholic Resource Center or Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And when you log in your Amazon account and you purchase products, a portion of it will go right back in supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And it doesn't cost you a dime. I want to thank you ahead of time because that supports us year-round. May God bless you and your family.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber.
Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
And hello, and welcome back to the last segment of Church of the Masses. This is the segment where I usually review something that's out in theaters, and the movie that I reviewed is Little Women. I'm going to that I saw this week is Little Women, and I'm just going to give you a heads up right away that I'm giving it 2 thumbs up. I think this is an amazing film. It's really interesting because I went to see Little Women having had my ears full of conservative warnings about the movie. I read a lot of things from conservatives, the conservative websites and conservatives' social media, saying that this was a feminist version of Louisa Maria Alcott's book, that it was, you know, a modern, that they had made Joe, you know, have a career instead of love, and they went on. And everything I read was not true. So I think sometimes on the right, not sometimes, a lot of the time, we're so suspect of what's out there in popular culture that we tell ourselves everything is bad before we even see it. We just presume it's going to be because it's coming out of the contemporary culture. And that is unfair and not true. And in this case, it's a shame if you miss Little Women because you're afraid that, you know, something you read, that this is some kind of feminist version. It's not, right? So this was lovingly done by Greta, the director here is, here we go, Greta Gerwig. And she wrote it too, based on the novel by Louisa May Alcott. Now, this is the lovingest version that I've ever seen. She had to love this book so much to do what she did with it. It's extremely novel in several aspects, and one of them is structure. So, you know, not giving away too much here, but note that the movie starts at the end. You know, you meet the, you're watching, it's really a pure coming-of-age movie of the four March girls from Little Women. Each one of them makes a journey into adulthood, or in the case of, you know, Beth, into her next challenge. But I think the idea of each one of them growing and changing, and so the movie structurally kind of skips around through the book to set up the grown-up lesson married to what happened in the past, to kind of show the challenge. It's really brilliant, just brilliant. And if you, it makes you want to go back to the book and see it again and see, you know, the anecdotes that she chooses. So the first thing I loved about this was just a visionary structure to make us pay attention to the book in a new way by cutting it up and kind of rearranging it, but not at all ruining the book. I think really showing the heart of it. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I think the movie Little Women by Greta Gerwig is actually more profound than the book by Louisa May Alcott. I think the book by Louisa May Alcott is lovely. It's powerful in that, you know, it impacted so many of us growing up, and beautiful things about family and sacrifice, et cetera. She pushes Greta Gerwig's version is really about kind of owning your own life and maturity and having to really choose what you're going to be. I mean, it is just very profound. So I love the structure. I thought the storytelling was brilliant and visionary by the director. I think Greta Gerwig was robbed. She should have been nominated for a directing nomination, Oscar nomination for this movie. But she definitely, they're getting a Best Picture nomination, so that's good. The second thing you have to talk about when you're talking about this new movie is the casting. So you have the main lead in the cast is this Irish actress who's just all the rage now, and her name is Saoirse Ronan. Now, I think I'm getting that right. Saoirse Ronan is how it's pronounced. And so she was actually born in the States, but then she went to she was at 3 years old. Her family moved back to Ireland, in Dublin. And so she actually grew up in Ireland. And so she has a brogue when she's speaking her normal language. It was what I thought was kind of funny was of the cast of Little Women, like three of them were, you know, this consummate American novel, three of them are British or Irish actresses playing the lead. Anyway, Saoirse Ronan does a stunning job. She's so talented. She has now, I think, made history by being nominated for 4 Oscars before she's 24 years old, right? So just really, really talented. When she's on screen, she's all you look at. She has it. She has an incredible presence, but she does a beautiful job with Joe. It's a different, at first I wasn't sure if I liked it, the way she was interpreting Joe, but then it really grew on me and I thought it was really wonderful. The other, actor, I mean, all of them do well. Florence Pugh is another, she's a British actress and she plays Amy, and she does a great job and it's such a weird role for her. She's going to be in Black Widow. You know, she's another one and she's all the rage. She's becoming, huge, and but she does a great job with Amy. Amy's such a difficult character because you're on Joe's side, you know, and then Amy's kind of her enemy. But she makes Amy very accessible, and you like Amy, you really feel for her, and it's just a really good performance. Other standouts: Emma Watson plays Meg. Emma, of course, played Hermione in the Harry Potter series. It's really nice to see her do something that requires real acting chops, and I think she does a lovely job here with Meg. Then you have others. You have Laura Dern plays the mother, small role, but she's a great actress and really fills out the part. Timothy Chalamet, he's another one who's all the rage, and you know I always find him a bit effeminate, but he does, I think with Laurie it works, and not that Laurie was effeminate, but you know, Laurie isn't exactly like a ruddy masculine man. And so Timothée Chalamet is kind of good casting there. He does a great job. And then finally, you know, you have Chris Cooper as Mr. Lawrence. You got Meryl Streep, a small role. She plays Aunt March. It's just a great cast. And the director really gets good performances out of all of them. Another thing I love about the movie is the score. I would say to anybody who wants to score movies that they should listen to the score of Little Women and how it's done, because it really is very in the background. It highlights the most the key emotions of different scenes, and without kind of overwhelming them. That was my cat. Yes, sorry about that. But the score is it's very sensitive. It's a very it's just right on point, and it absolutely doesn't overwhelm the movie, but it absolutely highlights it. And I think it's beautiful. I'm going to get a copy of it and listen to it because I thought the music was really lovely. And another thing they do interesting, the sound design in this movie is quite interesting. So usually the convention is that whoever has the line of dialogue gets the camera. And so that's how movies are shot, that actors who have the line of dialogue will recite their lines and then it gets kind of pasted together. This movie, it approximates more family life, that the four girls are together. They're doing whatever they're doing. They're tumbling around, they're cooking, they're bustling, you know, they're playing out, whatever. And everybody's talking at once, which I grew up in a family of four girls. That's what it was like. We were all talking at once. And yet you're all kind of hearing each other and tracking each other. And this movie does that. So you hear people talking and the camera doesn't go to them. Their voices just kind of come out into the mix. It's very neat. I hadn't seen any movie do that quite that way before. So I really thought the sound design was extremely clever. And again, surprising in a movie like this. But I think the director, the writer-director, Greta Gerwig, she had a vision for this movie, that this was going to be about a family life, that these sisters and what they meant to each other. And so she really, really makes that the centerpiece, the experience of the sisters together. And just really great. So that was another thing I loved about it. The costuming was also Very good. Each of the little women has a look, and it's sustained through the movie. Very interesting. And I thought about it first. I said, I wonder if that's realistic, but that is really, it doesn't have to be realistic. It's the look of the character. So Amy, you know, she just dresses really well all the way through the thing. You know, Joe is kind of, her hair is flying. She's not really attentive to that. You know, Meg is the beautiful one and she cares about that. Anyway, it was really interesting how the director writer here said to her costume designer, this is not about realism here. This is about, I want each character to really have their own style. And so they dress them. Yeah. Another thing I loved about the movie is the professor, and Joe does not leave love for her career. That is not true. She does have the professor, but the professor, thank God, is, I think this is an improvement on the novel. He's a young man. You know, in Louise May Alcott, I always say he's a dusty old German, you know, kind of gruff thing. Here he's a young fellow and just a really smart young fellow who's a professor, but makes it work even better, I think, the love story. So one of the coolest things they do, and this is a spoiler alert here, but is the movie morphs into the story of Louisa May Alcott at the end, that Joe becomes Louisa May Alcott. And so maybe this is what people are talking about when they talk about the, quote, feminist angle, in that, you know, she's fighting to have ownership of her novel. But that's true. You know, Louisa May Alcott was nobody's fool. And she was part of the American Bloomsbury with Emerson and Melville and Thoreau. And she was one of that group. So she was not going to be bandied with her work. And so that comes out in the movie. But yeah, it's so cool. And the scene at the end, when she's watching her book come together, it's actually being pieced together and the print laid and then the cover put on. And she's watching through a window like a person does when they're watching their baby in a hospital through the window, you know, like they're watching and she's doing that. It just was a beautiful image of the creator of a work of art. Their relationship to their art is very much like a parent to a child. So there's some beautiful images in the film, beautifully shot, beautifully written. I'm giving two thumbs up to Little Women, and I think you should go see it, and you'll want to see it again. I'm going to go see it again, and I don't see anything again. So that is great. So I have something to cheer for at the Oscars. I'm going to cheer for that one. I don't think it has a chance of winning. I think 1917 is going to win, and we'll probably be reviewing that next week. But at least there's some good stuff that's out there. And also Toy Story 4, I should make a note, was also nominated for the Oscar. That would be my other candidate for great film this year. So stay tuned for the Oscars. There's some good stuff there. And go see Little Women. It's definitely worth your time. So thanks for tuning in. This is Barbara Nicolosi and Church of the Masses on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.